Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest and greatest episode of Inside the Hexagon. I am your host, as always, Phil Lanides, and I want to thank you for taking the time to join us for today's show. On the episode today, we are talking with Hinato Babalu Sobral, the former Strikeforce light heavyweight champion. This is an interview that I have been looking forward to publishing for quite some time. It's very, very open and honest. We talk a lot about Babalu's career, of course, his early MMA career, facing Fedor Emelianenko early on in his career, getting into the UFC, and then getting cut from the UFC because of his actions in the infamous fight with David Heath, where he had decided that he was going to hold on to the choke too long to teach his opponent a lesson. So we delve into that. Then we talk about getting into Strikeforce, taking on Bobby Southworth for the title, and then, of course, what he's up to today. And sadly, he's dealing with a lot of physical issues. He's lost sight in one of his eyes. He's got a lot of knee issues. But he, you know, in spite of all that, he's got a positive attitude, and he's, like I said, very open and honest. So it's a very intriguing discussion. So with that, without further ado, let's get to it. All right. On the line with us, we have UFC Bellator vet as well as former Strikeforce light heavyweight champion, Hinato Babalu Sobral. Babalu, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. Is it good to talk to all the fans from Strikeforce?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's obviously you were a champion in the promotion, as we just said. So wanted to talk to you, but let's talk about your formative years a little bit. So you were, you know, obviously you are Brazilian. Brazilian fighters are, of course, mainly known for their BJJ skills, but you were a champion kickboxer and wrestler before you got into MMA. So this seemed to really set you up early on, obviously very strong BJJ as well, but this seemed to really set you up to be well-rounded. You won 16 of your first 17 fights. The only loss you had there was by decision to Dan Henderson, which is, you know, obviously nobody to be ashamed to have a loss from, but how much of an advantage did you feel like your well-rounded background gave you as far as you when you transitioned into MMA solely?
Well, my jiu-jitsu itself wasn't that great when I transitioned to MMA. Honestly, I knew wrestling and Muay Thai. And I knew I was training jiu-jitsu, but I was just for kind of block jiu-jitsu. I wasn't learning jiu-jitsu to understand jiu-jitsu. I was learning jiu-jitsu just for, you know, to strike or to defend from jiu-jitsu. So my jiu-jitsu wasn't that great. But later on, after I moved to Gracie Barra and put myself more into jiu-jitsu, I learned more and gave me good advantage. And by the time I was in the beginning of my, but before that, when I said that I was learning jiu-jitsu to block jiu-jitsu, I don't know if you remember, I was a student of Marco Ruiz, because from Ruiz Vale Tudo.
Of course, yeah. Early UFC legend, yeah.
Yes. So Marco Ruiz had a philosophy. If you punch and kick, I take you down and submit you. If you try to take me down, try to submit me, I punch and kick you. Do you remember that?
No, I don't, but that makes a lot of sense.
So, I don't know, in the back of the day, I mean, you kind of have to really go back. It's a little bit different the history that you have right now. I don't know if you can see from the old time perspective, but let me try to bring you back. Before I was style against style. And Marco, who was the first one to hybrid the styles? He was the first one to not put the R ahead of the fighter. He was the one he always have the philosophy for us to be an open mind to learn everything. And that was pretty much what we did. And we have a very successful campaign on the beginning because this philosophy. And I always navigate from different martial arts to try to understand and learn from different aspects so I can put inside the MMA. On the opposite time, people was in the back of the day trying to prove the martial arts. They're better than the others.
Right.
Do you understand the kind of to try to? I'm trying to explain more the perspective of old times. So
no. I get. So you're essentially like the Gracies. You know, they say that the UFC was supposed to be like a big commercial for Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. I mean, they didn't have any, you know, desire to, you know, Hoist wasn't out there trying to learn kickboxing and all that stuff. Their thing was our version of jiu-jitsu is the best fighting art. And what you're saying is that Marco was putting fighting ahead of the quote unquote art of jiu-jitsu and saying, no, exactly. we're about
or
trying to win fights.
Or any type of martial arts. He put the fight itself in the head of any martial arts. He taught us that we need to learn different disciplines to be the ultimate fighter itself. Did I explain myself well?
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. No, that totally makes sense. All right, so that's
why you succeed. And more people, I think, understood that after a while and did the same road, same highway. No, took the same highway. People from strike and start learning jiu-jitsu, just from jiu-jitsu start learning strike. Wrestlers start learning jiu-jitsu. Then later on, wrestlers start learning strike. And then the MMA fighters was created. That's pretty much what it is, what happened in the past. Yeah. I come from the old time. I mean, I probably remember one of the first MMA fighters before I wasn't a style itself. I didn't have any defending style myself.
Okay, but that makes sense. All right, so well, you can see why you did so well, especially early on. I wanted to ask you: you fought Fedor Emelianenko in your eighth fight. You lost by decision. What did you think of him?
What number was the fight?
It was your eighth. I'm sorry. It was his eighth fight. It was his eighth fight. Yeah. You'd already been fighting longer than that. I'm sorry.
Yes.
But what did you think of him as a fighter at that point? Did you see, at that point, all right, this guy is going to be something special, or so did you have a different opinion?
Is that other thing too? That, how can I say? We didn't have so much internet in the past. So we can really research about people. We can really research about fighters. We just have the names, the name the organization gives to me. That's the guy they want to fight. And maybe if I really hunt for a video, a VHS tape, I can try to find him.
We probably have some listeners that don't even know what a VHS tape is.
So VHS tape is a video cassette tape. So people doesn't know what it is. And by the time, that's the only access that I have with other fighters. No, here and there. Then I have one or two fight of his match before. And also because that, we didn't really see too much what you're going to see. We heard, you kind of pretend, this guy, we assume that the guy is going to do this or that, or the style of the fight in the same region. For Russians fighting that way, Americans fight that way, Japanese fight that way. Kind of had a hint how the fight's going to be. So when he can step inside and when I look into the cross the corner, I never saw him before. I saw him the tapes, two tapes, when he fought against Icarona. And Icarona he did very well in the fight. Mm-hmm. And when he fought Kosaka.
Right, yeah.
Kosaka won the fight by
it was a cut. Yeah, he got a TKO win because of a cut. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the fight that I had on my hands. And then when they were there, I'm pretty confident. But when the guy started striking, when the first clinch, I saw the guy was something. I was going to have a lot of trouble in the fight. So, yeah.
Well, you're not alone in that, obviously. So,
no.
And obviously, you're a more natural light heavyweight too. So he was.
Right. I was fighting the heavyweight at that time. That time, I think the weight class was 90 kilos and above 9 kilos. It wasn't the weight classes they're having today all pretty. You didn't have in the past. So if you want to be a fighter, or if you're above 90, or if you're under 90, that was really awesome, because before, no weight class. No, I had some match that I had fought really, really little guys and really big guys. So weight class was a privilege, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, you end up having, you know, a lot of, like we said, a lot of success early on. You have a 10-fight run in the UFC over two different stints. You beat guys like Maurice Smith, who was a former UFC heavyweight champion. You beat future middleweight title challenger Chael Sonnen. You also got guys like Jeremy Horn and Shogun Hua in other promotions.
I think Daniel Horn fought for the title as well, if I'm not wrong, for the UFC title.
Yes, he did. You're right. Yes, he did. So you beat some really big names during that time, and you know, you end up getting a light heavyweight title fight against the Iceman, Chuck Liddell. That doesn't go your way, but obviously a very viable contender and a top guy in that division. The year after the Liddell fight, you have the ill-fated win over David Heath, in which you held on to that anaconda choke after Heath had tapped, and you said afterwards that he had disrespected you, so you were teaching him a lesson, and you know, the Dana and the guys didn't like that. They end up releasing you. Looking back, I just want to ask you quickly about that. Looking back, is that something you wish you'd handled differently, or do you still feel like Heath deserved the lesson for calling you an MF-er?
Let me tell something about my past.
Sure.
I had a lot of things that I usually do differently, but the things that I did in the past, they make the person that I am today. That I'm not changed the person that I am today. So maybe I wouldn't.
Okay. So it helped you become who you are. So you take that from it. But you're afraid if you change that, maybe you wouldn't be.
But that I can say that this was a really big mistake.
Okay.
That I can clear myself. That I clear myself now was a really big mistake that I shouldn't do in that time. I was let my emotion talk above my reason.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's like I said, you don't learn unless you make mistakes. So, all right. Well, after that, you signed. Actually,
sometimes a mistake can get you kicked out. Sometimes second chance, like I didn't have on the Strike Force.
Right. Right. Yeah. It did open other doors, and you know, you probably wouldn't have gone to Strike Force if you hadn't have done that. So who knows, but you actually end up signing with a few different promotions, not just Strike Force, but you do get announced at the first Playboy Mansion show. And you did a little bit of commentary there. You had some injury issues. And then you end up facing Bobby Southworth for the light heavyweight championship in the main event of their Destruction event. And that's what I want to spend a few minutes on. Southworth was known as a grinder. At this point, we did have the internet. So I'm curious, did you get to kind of study up on Southworth? And how did you feel like you matched up with him?
No, I haven't zero studying about him at the time. I was just training. I was in a run with a few, like you said, I was fighting Affliction at the time as well. And I had to fight him. And I was just training, you know, right there, at the time, I was just a rolling stone, pretty much. I just tried to rolling above, on top of everyone. I didn't really do this for this person, do that for the person, honestly.
Okay. Well, I mean, Southworth, like I said, was really known as a grinder. And, you know, you during the fight itself, lots of clinching. Southworth did get a takedown early on. You end up cutting Southworth over the eye with a very solid left elbow, and it was a deep cut. And you know, the referee, John McCarthy, jumps in, takes a look at the cut, wants it looked at. Did you think it was over? I remember watching the fight, and you seemed to kind of be pointing at, like, you kind of knew that was a big deal. Did you think the cut was deep enough that was going to be the end of it?
I could have saw his brain through the cut. I knew it. They were supposed to stop. I would stop anyway because that would be too much.
It was pretty nasty. It was definitely nasty. And
Southworth is a great man, great fighter, and he held the title for a while. Correct? I'm not wrong.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. He held the title for two years.
He has a good sportsmanship. I think last to talk good about Bob Southworth. That time, on that day, I was the person that hit the strike in the right spot, in the right position. and then I won. That's pretty much what it is in a fight.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a ton to break down because, like I said, you got the takedown, you guys clinched a lot, and then you land that elbow. Yeah. And the doctor actually let the round finish. I don't know if you remember that, but he actually let it go for, it was like 10 seconds, and then stopped the fight in between rounds, which earned you the title. So, you know, this is a major title in a major organization. How did you feel winning the belt, A, and B, does it mean anything less to you because it came on, you know, a TKO where the ref stopped it, kind of anticlimactic? You didn't get to choke him out or knock him out or anything like that. Does that change it all for you? Or does it feel just as good?
Actually, I won a few fights like that. I mean, I don't know if I did. I don't remember. But my goal is to open wounds so the referee is supposed to stop the TKO and TK and submission for me. It's the same thing.
Okay.
It's the same feeling, you know. It's bad for the person that lose, though, because you want to fight, but you cannot fight because it's something that
happened. Yeah.
Or maybe you broke your arm, or you broke your legs, or you want, sometimes the person wants to fight and he cannot fight because the referee protects him. It's bad for the person that loses, not the person that.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but Southworth, two fights before his fight with you, he had lost to this guy, Anthony Ruiz, by a same thing. He got cut near the eye and the ref stopped it. And he wanted to keep going, but the ref wouldn't let him. And then they rematched and Southworth won by decision. But his fight with you, that was his first fight after fighting those two, or the same guy twice in a row. And one of them, he'd lost the exact same way that he lost to you. TKO via cut. So some guys, as you know, there's some fighters that they build up that scar tissue and they're just, you know, it's easy to cut them, you know. And Bobby just seemed to be one of those guys.
Wanderlei has a problem too.
Until you start
Pedro, he is on the back of the days. He has a problem with his eyebrow that he had to go through some plastic surgeries, it's like a glass chin, pretty much, you know. I can say that because I think it's more fixable than glass chin, but
you can't get surgery on your chin to make it tougher.
But it's kind of the same thing, you know. After you start cutting over and over, and your skin gets soft in that spot.
Yeah, well, it seemed like Bobby was one of those guys, I remember his though. It felt like you breathed on him later on in his career and it would just start bleeding from the eyebrow. You know, there's just some guys that are just
some guys they're bleeding a lot. But, I mean, not just the bleed. I mean, it just skin gets soft in some spot because it's after you cut one time and you cut the second time in the same spot, the third time in the same spot, you need to, and get stitches and stuff. You need to get cadaver skin or something in place because it's the same. I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't know, surgeon, plastic surgeon though, but it's pretty hard to heal for a while.
Yeah. All right. Well, regardless of how it happened, you did win the title and I assume so that we actually didn't really touch on that, but it felt, I assume that it felt good getting that nice big gold belt around your waist.
Of course. I was Strikeforce is a major organization and no better, no more than me. The thing that I would like to say about Strikeforce the most is the Strikeforce has a great staff, people to work. And for us as a fighter, it's very important to have someone else that you know that can take care of us. They know what we need and they are respectful more than anything. You know, sometimes events cannot provide what they can provide, you know, or you expect to be provided. But being respect is very important. And Scott, he knows how to deal with the fighters. I think he has Japanese philosophy. He need been an event, you know, I don't know. But he knows how we feel. He knows how we have to be treated. And I was very happy to be part of this event and be a champion in Strikeforce. not just because the event is great, just because I was very happy to fight for Scott Coker.
Yeah, Scott's a great guy. He's
not flattering. Already, because he's who is on the business know what I'm talking about.
Well, Scott Coker is I responded to the earlier part. You said he's part Korean and he was raised in a traditional martial art. So I think it makes him value the fighter and really take care of the fighters. And I think that's essentially what you're saying.
Okay. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Well, you end up fighting for Strikeforce several more times. You lost your title to Gegard Mousasi, who's one of the greats. You got a decision win over Robbie Lawler, which was a big deal. And you're one of only six fighters to hold the Strikeforce 205 pound title. So that's a really big deal. That's a really big thing for you to hang your hat on, you know, and that's, I assume that means a lot to you in your career, not just on that night, but in your career.
Oh man. Yes. I'm telling you, I can say that, you know, my fight against Rob Lawler was my last good run. My last good fight that I had. And after this was just downhill. Some fights and some training, but I think that was the last one. Every fight that you have is a chapter of the book that you're writing. And that chapter, I was training with Fabricio. I don't know if you remember, but that event was against Rob Lawler was Wednesday, and Fabricio fought against Fedor on Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I was there. I was there when he fought Fedor. I was there cage side when he tapped him out.
You know, we trained together for one same week event, and we had the same vibe and the same atmosphere. I helped him very much against Fedor. I knew how Fedor was. I fought Fedor.
Yeah.
You know, I helped him a lot to fight against Fedor. And after he shocked the world with the victory. And myself, with my victory against Rob Lawler too, was a tremendous accomplishment for both of us.
Awesome. Well, you've had a very, very good career. You did fight a couple more times before retiring in 2013. Looking back now, I mean, you mentioned earlier, you know, you have things that you may want to go back and you would do differently, but you're always kind of worried about how would that change you as a person. Exactly. Looking back now, how do you feel about your fighting career? I mean, you mentioned kind of being a bit of a rolling stone at times. Do you think you wish you'd been a little more focused or are you happy with the way things turned out?
Definitely. I mean, I think everyone else on the planet, any mature adults, when they look in the past, would do something differently to change stuff.
Absolutely.
The reason that people fighting now is a totally different reason that you fought in the past, that I fought in the past. And I think meaning has a lot to do with the successful people in Korea. And my reasons was the different, the piece, like I see the people, the reason today. And we are, I can see that we're more romantic. Can I say that? You're more romantic time. Sure. Time.
Yeah.
And when you're, so romantic time, that means they use a lot of emotion. So
more I use passion. How about the word passion? A little more passion back then?
Yes, passion. Passion. Passion make you do bad things too sometimes.
Right? It can be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how it's used.
Exactly. Sometimes they make you blind. And then that's what happened. I would change a lot of things. I would change behavior that I was having in the past, regardless of my social life. But that's what it is.
Okay. All right. Well, we got just a couple more questions. You've been very gracious with your time here. You gave an interview in 2019. You talked about some of the consequences of fighting. You had been having some issues with balance, you know, sight in your left eye and that sort of thing. How are you coping? How are you feeling these days? Are you doing better? Or what's going on with your health at this point?
I lost my left eye because the fight was I had a 14 surgeries total that I have to me. But that was I knew, I mean, that one thing that I knew that would happen. I'm not here and whining and about what happened. I just let you know what's happening. It's not something that, no, I shouldn't do this, I shouldn't do that. I just let you know that, let people know that if you want to be a fighter, you're going to have a scar tissues in the future. That's what I have, scar tissues in right now. And I have lost my left side and a lot of my knees, arthritis is being affecting me very bad on my knees. That's something that I cannot repair, you know, later on with a knee replacement. But definitely on the my head is being really different though. My balance is being really damaged and memory loss is being happening more constantly now. And like example now, you're talking about Rob Lawler. Mm-hmm. I even thought it was fucking Rob Lawler in Strikeforce. As you talk now, start bringing memory though. Then I remember, suck. You came me back, but when you said, I just told you, I sort of like tried to find myself on that situation. Also, yeah, sometimes I get some spike of depression during the month. There's something that I cannot control. I mean, right now it's kind of hard to say if you say that I'm depressed. I think probably 70% of the brain is a little depressed right now. So that's something that I cannot, it's not like everybody else. I can deal with my problems so far. But taking punches in the head is definitely something that, you like it or not, you're gonna have to pay the debts in the future.
Yeah. There's a price to pay, and go ahead.
I don't alarm people. I don't make propaganda against fight. You know, I don't make it because I think everything has a downside. You know, if my father was a scuba welder. I don't know if you know what it is. He's a welder in a platform deep in the ocean.
I was going to say, I just assume you weld underwater. Yeah.
So he has to really swim deep in the water. Then, no, here's the work he has to do. And damage his body, yes. But that's the thing he has to do. If you work in the mines, you know, you're going to have a damage in the lungs. But you got to work. You got to do what you got to do because you choose to do. Sometimes they push you to do that. Or in my case, I was choose to be a fighter. So it's nothing that I was put in there to fight it without knowing my risk.
Well, it's something I try to keep in mind with, you know, fighters that I have so much respect for you get for what you guys do, because you put so much on the line. And, you know, like we said earlier, there's a price to be paid. And for some people, the debt's a little more than others. You know, obviously with fears of CTE and all that stuff, I mean, you know, here's hopes and prayers that there's breakthroughs in treatment and all that sort of thing. And we can take care of our, you know, these athletes that have given so much of their bodies, you know, over the years, including yourself, obviously. So, well, I appreciate you opening up and sharing about that. I want to ask one more question, but before we do that, you run Babalu's Iron Gym, which is in Cerritos, California, which can be found online at BabaluBJJ.com. You're also on Instagram and Twitter at Babalu's Iron Gym. Anything else that you're involved in that you wanted to mention or that you want to promote to the listeners?
Well, no, I mean, it's funny, you know, after this is my art career and, you know, being a fighter, being out there right now, my main focus is kids. I have a lot of kids that I'm training now in jiu-jitsu, and I think the jiu-jitsu itself and the martial arts itself is a big, big character changer for the kids. You know, if you can play it safe and play it well, and jiu-jitsu itself is a great martial arts. They can play without, no, have the sense of being win and have true martial arts, true combat experience when you're in a jiu-jitsu match. And it's still being safe without, you know, having any more high damage. And I really think that a man like no Socrates, the philosopher, Greek Socrates.
Yep. So Socrates. Yep.
When a man is born, he has to work, raising a kid, and fight. And that's what you have to do. I think a fight itself can build a character, any human beings, in a very controlled environment. Right now, kids have been lacking of experience on human interaction and being put in to have a hardship. And sometimes people think, you know, why they give a lot of values for the fight is because you do a lot of things that people, not normal people, the people that not to choose to fight, not to do it. But we choose to fight, we choose to be in a bad spot. And this situation make us using the experience they have inside over there on the 4 or 5 minutes or 3 minutes, come back against someone else. You take the experience to your database life. So they make the kids that haven't been pushed, they haven't been playing. I don't know if you know, they're not allowed kids playing dodgeball in schools in those days anymore. They're not allowed kids to interact against each other anymore because everything is too hard, too harsh, too harmful to the kids.
Right. Right.
But inside the gym, you know, you push, you punch, you kick on friendly and controlled environment. And without, you know, compromise your health or compromise your well-being. Over there, you're being spotted sometimes and you have a bigger kid, you know, 12 years old on top of the kid. And he has to figure out a way to get out of the mountain without freaking out, without screaming, because he knows that if he doesn't do that, you know, he's gonna tap. And we teach a way the kids to bring a confidence in their way. Little by little, you teach the little kids, you teach the big kids also to respect the little kids. The little kids overcome the big kids. And inside, you don't have races, you don't have genders, everybody's equal. I think inside the martial arts is a great environment for, and sports itself is a great environment to develop the kid's character. I don't know if you understand me well.
Yeah, no, I totally understand what you're saying. I got two little ones. I want them involved in sports because it teaches them to deal with adversity. It teaches them to deal with overcoming challenges and all that stuff. So I'm completely on board with what you're saying.
Yes, as sports is a virtue. Is it something that we don't speak? You know, I cannot teach a person being cure. I cannot say, son, you need to be courageous to cross the street. If I don't grab his hands and walk with me a few times, you know, and tell him, no, this is safe. You have just to look to the right and to the left. You show them the way you can be a good citizen without having fear.
Well, I think that's a good spot to end the interview. Babalu, absolute legend in our sport. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us on Inside the Hexagon today.
Thank you very much for having me tonight.
All right, I want to thank my very special guest, Babalu Sobral, for taking the time to join us for today's show, and I especially want to thank him for being so open and honest with us. I really appreciate him taking the time and, again, really opening up about his career, about his, you know, his actions, some of the things that he regrets that he's done, and then, of course, what his physical condition is now. Again, I really appreciate that. That is, as we publish this, that is a very big discussion going on in MMA. I don't know if you've taken the time to look at the MMA fighting article on Spencer the King Fisher, but if you haven't, I highly recommend you Google it. It's very long, but it's very, very good. It's got a little video embedded in it as well, so it's definitely worth checking out. So this is timely, but I appreciate Babalu taking the time to join us. I also appreciate you taking the time to download this show. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at The Hexagon Pod, constantly putting out content on there. We would love for you to follow us. Also, would love to hear from you. You can reach me at phil@insidethehexagon.com. Would love to get your direct feedback on the show, what you think about about it, what you'd like to see more of, what you'd like to or hear more of, and what you'd like to hear less of. But I would love to just get your thoughts. And of course, I would love to get your ratings and reviews, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you catch this show. I appreciate it if you would take the time to rate and review the show. Looking ahead, we are going to finally enter into the so-called Showtime era for Strikeforce. This is in early 2009, Strikeforce acquired the assets of Elite XC, and as part of that, they also got a deal with Showtime and CBS. And so Strikeforce has the good fortune of being able to add to its ranks with over 40 fighters. There's tons of new names. Kimbo Slice actually is signed with the promotion, although he never fights for the promotion. We also see Chris Cyborg finally make her Strikeforce debut. Nick Diaz, Robbie Lawler, Jake Shields. I mean, Gina Carano. There are just so many names that are going to be added to the Strikeforce ranks, and we're going to start seeing them fight immediately. The first card that we're going to cover is Shamrock versus Diaz. Sadly, this is the last fight in the legendary career of Frank Shamrock, but it's an incredible fight with him and Nick Diaz. We also see just a barn burner of a match between Scott Hands of Steel Smith and Benji Razor Raddick. That's an amazing fight. Brett Rogers makes his Strikeforce debut and really makes a statement. Chris Cyborg makes her debut and absolutely makes a statement. There's just so much to get to. Gilbert Melendez takes on Rodrigo Dom for the interim Strikeforce lightweight title. So it's just a packed card. So I'm very much looking forward to getting into that. And then after that, we're going to be interviewing Frank Shamrock. He's going to be the first guest to come back on the show for a second time. And we're going to talk about his final fight with Nick Diaz, the very, very interesting buildup to that fight and the fallout as well. So I'm looking forward to reconnecting with Mr. Shamrock. But I hope that you are enjoying what we're putting out. Appreciate you taking the time to download and listen to this show. Appreciate all the support. But with that, we're going to go ahead and ride off into the sunset. Hope that you stay safe and you stay healthy. And we will see you soon.
Hi, listeners. We wanted to take a moment to tell you about another podcast from Evergreen Podcasts and Sound Talent Media called Pit Lane Parlay. Pit Lane Parlay is the go-to podcast for IndyCar and motorsports-related news. Each episode, we discuss things like our favorite drivers, news clips from the last week, and generally giving each other a hard time about predictions we've made in the past and or life stories that have come up recently. We really have a lot of fun with it and really enjoy each other's company, and we hope you can come join us too. Join Pit Lane Parlay by following us on your favorite podcast today.